When I was at primary school, I had a reputation for being utterly straight and trustworthy. I was, as I think it would come to a surprise to absolutely no one, a bit of a know-it-all and a bit of a swot. At home, I was a bit of a know-it-all as well, but compared to my brother, if one of us was going to be the naughty one, it was me. I'd be the one who would push things a bit too far. I'd shout, and that may actually surprise you. I have a very loud, shouty voice, as I think Ruth and Rosemary will attest. But when I was a child, I'd remonstrate endlessly about anything that wasn't fair. And by fair, I meant anything that wasn't done my way. Scott, my brother, was much more chilled. He largely did as he was asked. It also meant that when something happened, largely, I got the blame. If he said I'd done it, then I'd done it. Because frankly, he was much more reasonable than I ever was. Yes, he had 2 years head start in me in the world. He was a bit older and a bit wiser. And if I said that it wasn't fair and that it was Scott who had done X or Y, that was just the usual me being me, complaining at having been caught out again. Now, I'm not going to denigrate my parents over this attitude because it was usually correct, but not always. There was the tale of the former crystal vase, which I'll not go into, but Scott definitely broke that. But what's the point of my meanderings? Well, it's just an attempt to try and re-emphasize the second verse of our reading, that he, Jesus, wasn't respected where he had come from because he was known. It's much less likely that you to have respect for people when you've seen them grow up, as it were, learning to walk and talk, being educated, finding a career, job, or profession. I'm a bit circumspect about it myself, to be honest, because at Palmerston Place Church, you've seen something of me growing up. From being part of the quiet, newly married couple sitting up at the back over there, Wendy and I, we just used to come in the evenings, and we didn't really talk to anyone very much. But we came, and we kept coming. And then I became a new dad, and we started coming to the morning services as well. And, to cut a very long story short, ultimately, I've ended up as an ordained minister in the Church of Scotland with a new title, new clothes, and a new status that I didn't have before. And I wonder, are you going to think that I'm a fraud, just like my parents so unjustly did over that crystal vase? Jesus had suffered that, and he'd even left for Galilee from where he'd grown up. Why? Well, because people at home thought that he was just the carpenter's child, who had perhaps had a slightly odd birth, but that reading, that understanding of the passage, is something that we actually get from the Gospel of Mark, of chapter 6 of Mark, when Jesus is teaching in his hometown synagogue. And in that one, he definitely isn't respected preaching in his home synagogue. This point, however, is not the one which I think John is making, albeit he doubtlessly had the same hometown event in mind when Jesus says that a prophet has no honor in his own country. Now, John has a far higher view of who Jesus is in mind throughout his writing of his gospel. Right from the very start of his book, when John alludes to Jesus being present at and involved in creation. Saying that Jesus would just be ignored at home doesn't really fit with Jesus being the Word made flesh. The passage we read tonight is part of a longer section in John's Gospel, running from where we started to read to the end of the following chapter. And this section contains two signs of Jesus. And both of these signs are healing miracles and are designed to show that Jesus is not a man or a prophet, but they somehow deal with the idea that Jesus is a, or even the, mediator in life, and the mediator of all judgment. It's trying to explain and take the reader on a journey which bridges the gap from the opening grand statements of John about the Word being with God at creation and becoming human, and this itinerant rabbi carpenter. Now, we can see that John, in verse 54, described this healing of the official's son asks the second sign showing who Jesus was, which was performed by Jesus in Galilee. The first sign is also mentioned, and it's when Jesus turned water into wine at the wedding in Cana. Now, there are 8 signs in total in John's Gospel, and perhaps I hope to look at these a bit more in detail in our morning services after Christmas. But between the first and the second signs, Jesus spends a lot of time outside of Judea and Galilee in Samaria, and that's not amongst his peoples. For example, when he met the Samaritan woman at the well, he's not at home, and he's respected. Arguably, what John means when he references Jesus speaking about a prophet having no honor in his home country is that it is more understandable that Jesus would have respect when he was out with his own community, when he wasn't with other Jews who were his own people. When he speaks with and amazes Samaritans, who Jesus himself shows as being a distinct peoples, and when he speaks to the woman at the well, then he receives honor. Yet, in these 2 signs that I've referenced, both take place in Cana, he is in Galilee. And in Galilee, that means he is among his own people, the Jews. But through both of these signs, Jesus is shown respect, especially perhaps in being approached by a royal official from Capernaum, while he is in his own country. Now, the point John is making is that notwithstanding the reaction at home narrated in Mark's Gospel, actually, Jesus is still at home in Galilee, as that is part of his own country. And nevertheless, he, Jesus, is being respected. Perhaps not yet for the right reasons. The official sees a miracle worker and a teacher, not the Messiah. But he respects Jesus, just not quite for the right reasons yet. At this point, the respect is focused on Jesus performing signs. In time, that performing of signs will move on, and a greater understanding of who Jesus is develops. Now, that is not a narrative arc for us to discuss tonight. But I think the take-home point is that Jesus overcomes the stereotype of the prophet not being respected at home, because he's not just a prophet par excellence, he is God. Now, where am I going with this? Well, I'm not God, but I think you know that. It's been quite a personal journey for me as I was looking over this passage. It initially immediately reminded me of the passage from Mark, which was something that I was careful to avoid preaching on here when I spoke here in the morning before I was appointed as minister. The very first Sunday after Colin, the minister of long-standing decade service here, had left before he retired. The Sunday after Colin's last Sunday here, I preached. The passage in the lectionary that Sunday was this passage from Mark about a preacher not being respected at home. And that seemed just about the worst thing that I, as a returning preacher, who had called and throughout my training called and still do call this church to be our family's home congregation. Now, Wendy and I were not married here, but we became members of the Church of Scotland here, and Rosemary and Ruth were both baptized here. The idea of coming home was the point which gave me the biggest pause when Ian got in touch with Jack and I to see if either of us would be interested in coming back to fill this gap which presbytery planning has created between the end of Colin's ministry here and Palmerston Place being allowed to call a new minister. I was worried about coming back, being seen as, to paraphrase Billy Connolly, the wee pretendy minister until you got a proper one. And until yesterday, when I was actually writing the framework for what I think God wanted me to say to you tonight, that was still a big barrier in my head. And that's not even withstanding that this was the week in which I was finally ordained here, not as your parish minister, but still as your minister. In pretty equivalent terms, actually, to the ordination which Colin had here in 1981. But still, that hadn't really helped. I was still worried about being treated as the wee pretendy minister. No, it wasn't my ordination as a minister that eased my doubts. It was the words which we read tonight in John's Gospel that have finally taken me through to the other side of my anxiety about coming home here to Palmerston Place. In John's Gospel, Jesus is in his own country, in Cana, in Galilee, amongst Jewish peoples, but he is respected. And we stand in the power and love of Christ because he was respected. I know that I can be as well, not as Colin was, but for myself. It gave me the mental freedom to realize that I can be respected for being me. And I think that I have something to offer in this role as the minister here whilst presbytery planning trundles on. And this is part of how the wide, long, high, deep love of Christ can hold me here, and how you show my family that we can be rooted and established here, and thereby all of us, you and I, are able to accommodate just a bit more of all the fullness of who God is. What he's done for us inside our hearts, and that this fullness of God will continue to seep out of us into our lives. So here's another wee insight into how my week has panned out. I need to pick a sermon title reasonably early in the week so that Paul can get orders of service drawn up and the weekly email sent out on Wednesday. And as I'm just sort of doing more ad hoc preaching at the moment between Bill and I until the new church year starts, I quite often don't have a firm idea from one week to the next of what's the next thing I'm going to preach on. Now, this morning was Harvest Thanksgiving here in Palmerston Place, and I had a fairly good idea of what I was going to preach on and what I wanted to say then. This evening's passage, though, was largely chosen on the basis that it followed on from the story of the Samaritan woman that we'd looked at before. And so the sermon title was just picked as a continuation of what I spoke about last week, Faith in Action. Not particularly admirable of me, I know, but it was going to be a busy week. I didn't want to take too long thinking up a grand title and schematic at the start of the week because I was just too busy. I didn't know what I was going to say tonight. And I didn't have any idea of how faith in action was going to be shown in my sermon. I perhaps thought it would be about the official leaving Jesus and after being told his son would live, without yet knowing that anything had changed. And perhaps maybe the three times that the phrase is mentioned in the passage which echoes the Trinity of God, that the Son was living. However, that's not at all what it has been. Rather, the faith has been in action in my life as I read this passage. I realized the bit about the prophet being treated badly at home in John wasn't actually the negative thing I'd always just assumed that it was from reading the phrase being used in Mark's Gospel. Actually, in John's Gospel, the phrase is used to show us that we, in Christ, can step beyond such limitations because that kind of limitation doesn't hold back the work of Christ. I think I believe now in a deeper way than I did last week, and not what I just sort of assumed in my head, but I believe that now. So this week, the faith in action has been me reading my Bible and realizing that it says something far more powerful about the unknowable vastness of our God. And it's allowed me to see him in a new way. I hope that you can get similar insights if you pick up and look at this passage or any other passage in the Bible this week, because that too will be faith in action. Amen.